Soham samanyayamayastapo maya prajapatinam abhivandata patihi astaya yogam nipunam samahitas tannadya kacham yaatma sammaha. And then we have a translation. Although I am known as the great Brahma, perfect in disciplic succession of Vedic wisdom, and although I have undergone all austerities, and am expert in mystic powers and self-realization, and this is a word and a topic that Srila Prabhupada will repeat quite a bit here, self-realization. And although I am recognized as such by the great forefathers of the living entities who offer me respectful obeisances, still I cannot understand Him, the Lord, the very source of my birth. So, of course, in general, how do we say? First canto is a preface. Who's talking to who, what's the purpose of the book, under what circumstances. Then the main speaker now starts to talk, Sukadeva Goswami, in the second canto. And he presents everything, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, in three chapters. In the first step in God realization, the Lord in the heart, and then the change in heart, pure devotional service. Then Maharaj Parikshit says, "Oh, very nice, but was again, you know." So then he agrees to explain the Bhagavatam as Brahma spoke it to Narada much earlier, like that, because of course he heard it from Vyasa, Vyasa heard it from Narada, and Narada heard it from Brahma. So one chapter then of glorification of the Lord, permission to speak the Bhagavatam. Then there's this whole encounter where Narada Muni has this problem, because we find every single time, sure seems like it, that somebody has a problem. The sages are doing fire sacrifices, they're not working. Queen Kunti doesn't want Krishna to leave. You know, Grandfather Bhishmadeva is about to leave. And so now Narada Muni's problem is that he sees his father is so great. His father, Lord Brahma, holds the whole universe in his hand like a walnut. But still he sees him worshipping somebody superior, it seems. So Lord Brahma says, yes, unless you knew about Lord Vishnu, you might think I was the supreme. And I remember it. I was trying to survive as a grihastha here and there in the beginning. And so I was trying to study to become a salesman. And their philosophy very much was very advanced in the mode of passion, that you have to live to get an income, to become respectable in society, and you've got to push yourself and this and that. And very much their idea was that the mode of passion was the supreme goal in life, like that, to get out of the ignorance and out of ignorance, out of bondage to others. But when some actually experiences the mode of goodness, then he realizes it's superior. So that's what Narada Muni is trying to inform Lord Brahma, because it seems like in the beginning Narada's position is like that. He doesn't see much beyond his father, who's a manifestation of the mode of passion. And of course, passion means respectable society. Gross gratification is in the mode of ignorance. In the mode of passion, we want to dress our children and our wife nicely, go and circulate amongst the leaders of society and have proper subtle perks and glorifications, and then have that kind of gratification, extended mental gratification. Maybe not so much intellectual gratification, but at least the mind is satisfied with these different monodharma, things. I'm white, I'm black, this and that. And so then Brahma then he starts to explain things, how the universe is created, how he's an engineer, and he explains them from a very, basic level. Because nowadays we're so gross that seeing is believing. Seeing is believing. It even cuts out hearing is believing. So people, we talk to teachers in the universities, And they say every year the students and they themselves are becoming more and more visual. That you, when you make your presentation, unless you have a strong visual aspect, then don't expect people to understand or appreciate your presentation like that. So we're falling into third class level where people can't even, you know, imagine, you know, visual images. You know? So Brahma is explaining things in the beginning from a very, you know, gross level of how the gross elements are created, the whole basis of the thing like that. You know? And now then he comes to that the whole universe has been created, and now what are we going to do with it? So these few verses before this were all, of course, about sacrifice, how the elements came from the limbs of the Lord, and how they were offered to the Lord, and then how he performed the sacrifice, how Narada and all his brothers, the nine brothers performed them, then the Manus, then mankind. And now he's taking, I think, a step back, and looking at the Lord, you know, again from a more kind of a broad perspective. And so many of these verses, there's about five or six verses in the series, they're all based upon this point that we can't know the Lord. We can't know the Lord. We can't know the Lord. He's unknowable. He's unknowable. Even though he adopts all these material instruments, he's always transcendental, but he adopts the modes of nature. He does this and that. You know? And it's a very common presentation. You know? And don't think because the Lord is in the deity form you know him. Don't think because the Lord has given certain material system, you know, that you know him and you control him. You know, no. And so here he's giving a very specific set of qualifications that he has. And he's pointing out how this is not enough for him to know. Let's go ahead here with a purport then. Okay. So I hope you can see this, everything okay. It takes a little bit of a delay. I discovered how to use my cell phone as a hotspot. So I'm burning up my data. But it's convenient, but I think it's going to be okay. Purport. Brahma, the greatest of all living creatures within the universe, is admitting his failure to know the Supreme Lord. Despite his vast learning in the Vedic wisdom, okay, there's one, okay, despite his austerity, penance, mystic powers, and self-realization, and despite being worshipped by the great Prajapatis, the forefathers of living entities. This is something Prabhupada does many times, no? He'll actually just paraphrase the text in the beginning of his purport. You know? So very list. He has all these different qualifications. What more can you have? You know? Scientists, of course, our way of knowing, we're talking about epistemology now. Many times philosophers, they divide philosophy into three categories: epistemology, ontology, and praxeology. Epistemology means how you know. Episteme means the ground upon which you stand. So epistemology is how do you know? And then ontology is the ultimate nature of things. What can you know? Kshetra, kshetra, jnana, napi. So in that chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, the conclusion is that the knowable is the supersoul. Everything else is changing. You know? But the supersoul within all this manifestation is knowable. You know? Doesn't mean you can love him. There's sad and chit with the supersoul, but there's no ananda. You know? So then you can know him. You can, you know, knowable. How do you know? Epistemology, ontology, what can you know? And then finally, praxeology. What do you do about it? How do you apply it? Yeah. So right now, Brahma is discussing epistemology. And of course, our predominating epistemology, which for a long time in the West, and especially we're trained in this from the time before we can even think, practically speaking, we're trained in this scientific method, scientific view, which is called rational empiricism. Empiricism means direct perception, and then you use rational processes, jnana, to expand it. So basically, they're accepting pratyaksha and some kind of jnana. But then jnana, introspection, meditation, mysticism, they touch on it indirectly. Indirectly is considered a part of our epistemology, but very quickly it has to be certified by direct perception and rational application. So Lord Brahma doesn't even really deal with that very much. Even the Bhagavad Gita is considered such an inferior way of knowing things that is not dealt with very much. But he's talking about knowing, through austerity, which is there in science. You have to be austere. You have to look at the things carefully. You have to control your vision. You have to control your sensuous experience in a very precise fashion. You have to repeat it over and over again. Many people have to do it. So there's a lot, and scientists admit this, there's a lot of austerity and penance in doing science, a lot of it. Now, mystic powers, okay, don't get into that so much. And self-realization, well, how much of that is there? Because if he has, and so Prabhupada will talk about it later. Let's go ahead here. Okay. So these qualifications, Prabhupada says, are not sufficient. Excuse me. Are not sufficient to know the Supreme Lord. Brahmaji could understand the Lord to a little extent only when he was trying to serve him by the eagerness of his heart. Hridaut kanjavata. And this is a word that occurred earlier. Brahma says, I held on to his feet with great enthusiasm. So that's the word there, no? Hridaut kanjavata. Now that's what it means. From his heart, he was holding on, which is the devotional service mood. So here the self-realization is starting to come in, realizing that he's a servant of the Lord with a serving attitude from all his heart, then he can know the Lord to a little extent. Therefore, the Lord can be known only by the sincere mood of eagerness for service. My goodness. And how can we know anybody? How can we know anything? I mentioned it before. There was one university used to do, I'm not sure if they still do it, it was on the East Coast, Nobel Laureate Conference on Aesthetics. That's beauty and science. And the proceedings were very interesting. They had Heisenberg and other people, and Nobel laureates would then make their comments about how beauty fits into science. Very nice topic. And they were, making this point that somewhat of a service attitude was coming in of appreciating nature and glorifying its beauty. So, but where is that? It's not there in our modern epistemology. It's so mechanistic, so... We want to control things by mechanistic fashion, a mechanical fashion, by very brute, gross fashion. So many manifestations of this idea. Control nature by sterilizing the soil and then by artificially inseminating nature with metal tools to inject seeds. Then artificial irrigation, artificial pesticides, and then harvesting with machines, and then distributing with machines, and then genetically engineering artificially. So our control of nature, there's no love, no eagerness to serve in a serving mood. Therefore, the Lord can be only known by a sincere mood of eagerness for service and not by any amount of material qualification as scientist or speculative philosopher, or by attainment of mystic powers. This fact is clearly corroborated by the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, the mystic powers, in most cases, in the modern world, in the different poets, or even scientists, usually what it means is to get drunk. Some kind of intoxicating, some kind of intoxication, and in that state, blow up their mind to get some kind of, maybe some kind of higher realization, which is probably 90% mad, you know. But they do get it like that. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Na Shochati Na Kangsati Sama Sarvesha Bhuteshu Ma Bhaktim Labhate Param Bhaktiyama Mabijanati Yavanyas Chasmitatvataha Tatuman Tatvato Gnatva Vishate Tadanantaram. So the word Vishate will appear again and again. Prabhupada says then, only self-realization by attainment of the above high qualifications of Vedic wisdom, austerity, etc., can help one on the path of devotional service. It's a little bit of a complicated thing. We think you don't need them, but this is to get a footing, you know, to help one onto the path, maybe not to progress. Once you've got a little devotional service, just do it. That's the best way to get wisdom, to get austerity. But if you're not there yet, yeah, then if you're actually a nice person doing austerity, cultivating wisdom, you know, and getting high qualifications, being a very respectable person like that, Socrates, maybe Confucius, you know, then that will help you onto the path of the devotional service. And when you get off, it also, if you can't stick with devotional service 100%, if you're not a pure devotee, then over and above your devotional service, then you should cultivate knowledge, cultivate austerity, jnana vairagya, and that will bring you back to the path of devotional service. Yeah. But failing in devotional service, one remains still imperfect, because even in that position of self-realization, so here self-realization seems to be the beginning of aham brahmasmi. And then to realize one's relationship to the Paramatma at that level. You know, realizing one's relationship to the Paramatma and realizing Sama Sarvesha Bhuteshu, that all living entities, you know, are like connected to the same Paramatma I'm connected to. Failing in devotional service, one remains still imperfect, because even in that position of self-realization, one cannot factually know the Supreme Lord. By self-realization, one is qualified to become a devotee. Yeah? Yeah, this means like realizing, as I go, boy, that's the beginning of a tat-tat-tat-tatva brahmati paramatmati bhagavanity sabdate yajnatva. And the devotee, by the service mood, bhaktya, only can gradually know the personality of Godhead. Yeah. So the word for self-realization that back in the Sanskrit, word by word, was samahitaha. Samahitaha. Yeah. Samahitaha. Samahita means benefit. Samasarvesha bhuteshu. One should not, however, misunderstand the import of Vishate, which again was the last verse in the series of Bhagavad Gita citations from Prabhupada, you know, it enters into, right, as referring to merging into the existence of the Supreme. Even in material existence, one is merged in the existence of the Lord. No materialist can disentangle self from matter, for the self is merged in the external energy of the Lord, as no layman can separate butter from milk. No one can extricate the merged self from matter by acquiring some material qualification. You know, it's a little interesting, because I was working with Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj in the science program, and he wrote a book called Krishna the Supreme Chemist. And every discipline, if you start to develop it, you develop it. Of course, you develop your own sub-language, what's it called, your own jargon, your own terminology. So scientists have a very, chemists have a very specific specific way of using, you know, language. And so he was explaining this point about how the self becomes merged with the external energy. And I think he was using the example of free radical oxygen like that. It has like an extra proton or something attached to it, you know? So it's not actually regular oxygen. It's actually oxygen with one extra plus charge. And it's called a free radical, you know? And so the chemists, they know, yeah, this is bound up. It's tight, you know? But they also know that by a proper chemical process, you can separate the extra proton or whatever it is and end up with ordinary oxygen again like that, you know? So it was really humorous seeing how he was talking in the language of these chemists, which was actually very poetical. He wasn't using the example of separating butter from milk, you know, which Mother Yashoda could do, but he was talking with the example of free radical oxygen. And they were going, oh, okay, yeah. Okay. So we can talk about an Atma, and the Atma is different than the self, but it's not going to appear that way unless you really know what you're doing. And so then, yeah, theology should be a science that can teach us how to separate the soul so we can actually experience it like that in a very, very, you know, practical way, not just, you know, sentiment. You know? It's also interesting to me that Prabhupada is saying that kind of we're always merged. You know, we're never independent. You know? So normal condition, you know, we're merged into the existence of the Lord and matter, but vishate doesn't mean we become one, you know. It actually means we become merged into the activities of the higher Shakti.
Okay.
Okay. Then Prabhupada continues, this vishate by devotion, bhaktya, means to be able to participate in the association of the Lord in person. Bhakti or devotional service to the Lord means to become free from material entanglement and then to enter into the kingdom of God, becoming one like Him. Losing one's individuality is not the aim of bhakti yoga or of the devotees of the Lord. There are five types of liberation, one of which is called sayujya mukti, or being merged into the existence or body of the Lord. The other forms of liberation maintain the individuality of the particle soul and involve being always engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Of course, we're trying to do this Bhakti by Baba program, and we're on our group is on the last year now, finally. And there are certain verses, you know, key verses to memorize, and this is one of them. I can't find it right away. Tashyara Vinda. Yeah. It's going to be from Kapil Dev's instructions. Yeah. Well, I can't remember what it was. It talks about the different levels like that. Salokya, Saarsti, Samritya, Sampasaha. But it's interesting because it starts off with, I think, Salokya, which means we're coming from outer space towards the Lord's planet. You know? And then next, I think, is Saarsti or something, which means that once you're on the planet, then, of course, we enjoy the same opulence. If you get the visa to the United States, you can enjoy the opulence of America like any citizens. So next is the same opulence as the Lord. The next one is, okay, then you actually meet the Lord Himself, so then you have the personal association of the Lord. Okay. But then you actually start to even look like Him. So the way it's presented like that is a whole series of verses going from this, you know, the same planet, the same opulence, personally meeting Him, and actually even appearing like the Lord like that, so on. You know? Where is that? Yeah. Should be in my verse list, but it's not here. Oh, yeah, there it is. 329.13. This is part of our work in the Bhakti Bhai Baba, developing a nice Bhakti Bhai Baba verse book. Because there's some verses that Prabhupada quotes more, some he quotes less, some are in the first six cantos, and then some are quoted in the purports a lot, so we should also know those. 329.13. Salokya Sarasti Samyapya Sarup aikantvam apiyuta diyamanam nagrinanti dinamat sevanam janaha. That even if devotees are offered any of these liberations, they won't accept them if they don't have a chance to serve Krishna. And in Goloka, they especially don't aren't concerned about in any of these kinds of liberation. Or maybe they'll accept them if it's useful for their service, but they're not really concerned about them. Okay. Other forms of liberation maintain the individuality of the soul and involve being always engaged in the fast and loving service of the Lord. The word visite used in the verses of the Bhagavad Gita is thus meant for the devotees who are not at all anxious for any kind of liberation. The devotees are salvation. Lord Brahma is the first living being who directly learned the Vedic wisdom from the Lord, Teni Brahma Hrida Adi Kavaye. Therefore, who can be a more learned Vedantist than Lord Brahma? Because he claims that. He says, I am perfect in disciplic succession. But what's his perfection? Is he heard it from the original source of the whole disciplic succession. So who can be a better person in the chain than the second link, even the first link? Yeah. He admits that in spite of his perfect knowledge in the Vedas, he was unable to know the glories of the Lord. Since no one can be more than Lord Brahma, how can a so-called Vedantist be perfectly cognizant of the absolute truth? The so-called Vedantists, therefore, cannot enter, where is it here, into the existence of the Lord without being trained in the matter of Bhakti Vedanta, or Vedanta plus Bhakti. Vedanta means self-realization. So again, the word self-realization. And Bhakti Vedanta means realization of the personality of Godhead to some extent. So clear that self-realization here is talking about this, about Brahman and maybe Paramatma. No one can know the personality of Godhead in full. Not even Krishna can know himself in full. But at least to a certain extent, one can know the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, by self-surrender and a devotional attitude and by nothing else. So if you can see our PowerPoint show here, we have one of our favorite pictures, which is Lord Chaitanya, who is very beautiful. Like that, he's youthful, very gentle. I saw a statue one time, and so attractive, And I think what Lord Chaitanya was 7 feet tall or something, with the hands down to his knees and eyes like lotus flowers. And you see some people, and right away you realize this is a very aristocratic looking person, And maybe they have bad qualities, but still their body is just karma just carrying them. So immediately when people would see Lord Chaitanya, they would realize, he must be a Brahmin. Doesn't have the heavy, gross musculature of a Kshatriya, fine qualities, but also very big. It's generally agreed in psychology that bigger people are more intelligent than smaller people. This is, psychology has a big problem in measuring intelligence. But one general principle is kind of works out that bigger people are more intelligent than smaller people. Not universal, obviously. And that's why I see one lady professor, she was saying maybe this is in some ways white men, score higher on a lot of these intelligence tests, because usually they're bigger than women. So of course, if you're storing your memories in terms of your gross body, which we do generally, we link. You see people, when they try to remember something, they'll look up. They had to break the physical contact, or also have to adopt a certain posture or move their hands in a certain way. So many times we link our memories, which of course is one of the biggest signs of intelligence, and our thinking abilities, in terms of our body, being able to dance, being able to adopt certain postures. So if you've got a bigger body, then of course you can have a bigger memory. You know? So anyway, Lord Chaitanya in the center of the picture here, this is from Adi Lila chapter 7. He's with all the sannyasis in Varanasi and headed by Prakashananda Saraswati. So they were all Vedantists. And most likely they had realized Brahman in many cases. They were strict. They weren't cheating. And they were doing austerities. You know? And so they were in a good position in many ways. And of course it's a very wonderful dialogue about how he preached to them, how he got them to appreciate Bhakti Vedanta. And in the end, they accepted it. You know? At that point, they became eager to go ahead, you know. So it's a very, very nice preaching platform, you know, trying to engage these highly qualified, austere people and going from Vedanta realization to Bhakti Vedanta. In the Brahma Samhita also, it is said, Vede Shudurlabham, or simply by study of Vedanta, one hardly can find out the existence of the personality of Godhead, Videshu Durlabham. But the Lord is Adurlabham Atma Bhaktau, very easily available to his devotee. Simply Vyasadev, Srila Vyasadev, Krila Vyasadev, therefore was not satisfied simply by compiling the Vedanta Sutras, but over and above this, by the advice of his spiritual master, Narada, he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam in order to understand the real import of Vedanta. Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, is the absolute medium by which to understand the Vedanta, the absolute truth. And we finish off then by repeating this last part here. Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, is the absolute medium by which to understand the absolute truth. Yeah. And so, of course, you know, this is the very means of conquest, is Srimad Bhagavatam. In that Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada says that the duty of the spiritual master is to teach Srimad Bhagavatam to his disciple. Yeah. What's his name? Vyasadeva Chaitanya Mangala. He's, oh boy. Anyway, from Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, he's the Vyasadeva of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. He says, my only desire is to have Lord to study Srimad Bhagavatam life after life with Lord Nityananda as my teacher. Like that. It was popping in and out of my memory. Okay. So this is our whole goal then, to arrange somehow or other so we can hear Srimad Bhagavatam at the beginning of each day and then apply it and examine it and reflect on it, you know, during our day as devotees in our service to Krishna, and let it penetrate deeper, distribute it to others, and of course in the evening come back and then reflecting upon that experience. You know, so full morning and evening program like that. You know. And that's just about all of our presentation then. You know, and maybe some other people have some comments and so on about these verses. And also maybe about this point especially, about how to be able to take advantage of Srimad Bhagavatam more and more. Thank you very much.
Maharaj, I have a poor connection. You probably hear me all choppy, but I unmuted everyone.
No, your connection is very clear. It's not at all choppy.
Oh, really? Okay. Brilliant presentation, Maharaj. I appreciate it very much. Anyone have any questions or comments?
I'll make a comment then, a brief one. That regarding the importance of hearing Bhagavatam, and Maharaj, you're talking about the application to try to remember it and think about it throughout the day. Well, for what it's worth, that I often find that, not always, but often there's like one point that really captures me in the Bhagavatam class that sticks with me. Sometimes it sticks with me for days. It may not have even been the main point of the Bhagavatam class, but just a point that particularly affected and particularly was relevant at this time in my spiritual journey. And I just find that very relishable. It happens often. And it may be something that the speaker was just saying very casually, but somehow it sort of jumped into my heart. And, of course, hearing the whole Bhagavatam, is just to hear it is so purifying. It, as we know, it washes away the false ego and purifies us. It's non-different from Krishna. It's just taking the bath. So kind of both things were there. I hear it and relish it because it's non-different from Krishna, the purification. But intellectually, very often, this one point that jumps at me for some wonderful reason, and I often find myself thinking about that point for days.
I know what you mean. It's just like, so for example, like in my mind, again and again and again, one thing I didn't even know where I heard it. I couldn't remember that. I thought, oh, it's in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, one purport. Prabhupada says, one should not become one's enemy's enemy. And so many times people are becoming your enemy. And especially, of course, if you feel it's undeserved, you know, somebody's attacking you or you for some quality you don't deserve, you know. Oh, did you hear? Hanapurishakswami is a Ritvik. I don't know. Oh, this or that. You know? And so, and the natural response is to become your enemy's enemy. So I remember Prabhupada's the phrase, don't become your enemy's enemy. And so many times, whoop, it's pulled me out of, like, you know, a whole tailspin like that. And the same way, different phrases. And I think the other side of it is that the intellectual side, in a more complete package where we discuss the more intellectual, broader thing, I don't think we don't think about that so much. It saves us. It directs us without really our consciousness of it. The Mother Aruda and Ananta Roop, they had Radhika and Gopal for little kids in Boise, Idaho. And Idaho, of course, Boise is a very Mormon place, you know. So they were putting them in the first grade, whatever it is, like, you know, preschool, everything else, in the public school. And the teachers were very friendly, you know, and they were very, you know, interested and curious. And they said, okay, we'll make sure they don't, the little friends don't give them meat to eat and that kind of stuff. And so the beginning was quite nice, and she was taking snacks to them during snack time and stuff. But what they discovered was that they were starting to become little fruitive workers. That without even thinking about it, that's the whole philosophy. That if you sit properly or you learn something, I'll put a little star by your name. And so they started thinking that way about you do something because you get some result for yourself. And so that's when they pulled them out of the public school system, because they could see that it wasn't a matter of just the gross things, you know, this and that, this and that. It was a subtle underlying philosophical perspective. So I think by hearing the classes every day, that's something we pick up, and we don't even notice so much that it's helping us all day. You know? And what else? Yeah, and of course the other thing you're talking about is just the direct change of heart. This goes even lower than that, just by associating with it. It gets this violence and hostility out of our heart, and just, you know, makes us better people like that. You know?
Maharaj, I have a question. I hope you can hear me. My end is choppy because I have a poor internet connection. But if you can hear me,
it's perfect, very clear, totally clear.
Isn't it odd? Because on my side, you're all choppy. I liked your explanation of epistemology, ontology, and I forgot the last term you used. I wasn't familiar with it. But my question is, can that be used as synonymous? Can you stretch it to being synonymous with Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana?
I think it's, well, because Sambandha means we know our relationship. Sambandha means, from my understanding, reading it, you know, means detachment from matter and attachment to Krishna. It's just like you're looking for a job, you put your application in many places, and finally you get a letter or a phone call from the Bank of Hawaii, you know, saying, hey, we saw your application, we got a job for you. If you're interested, come on Thursday to this address and then this room. Okay. So now, you know, sambandha. I'm not unemployed. I am employed, but that's it. Now what's my job going to be? Am I going to be a bank guard? Am I going to be a bank teller? Am I going to be a bank president? So that's what abhideya is. Abhideya is where you actually start to, you know, understand the actual working process by which you're going to make money. But the beginning of sambandha is just this level of detachment from matter and attachment to Krishna, kind of shantaras. So epistemology, ontology. I would say ontology also goes to that level, you know. And then it's in the praxeology, practice, praxeology, is where you're starting to get to sambandha, abhideya, like that. Yeah. And then the Western philosophy doesn't talk about prayojana, you know, so much, exactly. You know. A little different, seems like to me.
Maharaj, where did you get "Don't become your enemy's enemy"?
It's in one purport. I remember, you know, like I remember the saying was rolling around in my head, you know, and then I, you know, in one of my reviews of the Bhagavad Gita, I saw it. It's in one purport, you know. I think it's the point where austerity of speech, austerity of this, austerity of that, you know, shows up. I kind of remember where it was, you know, but it was in the purport, you know, Bhagavad Gita.
Maharaj, okay. Hare Krishna, this is Mahesh Prabhu. Have a question for
you. Hari Bol.
Hari Bol. Now, you were mentioning that there is five kinds of liberation. One of them is merging into the Supreme, but the devotees are not interested in any kind of liberation, isn't it?
No, the Sayujya Mukti, no, that's the one we don't. We don't like that because we become, you know, one with the Lord. It puts a permanent end to devotional service. But the other ones, Sarsti, Samipya, Salokya, those occur in Vaikuntha. And Vaikuntha Vasis, they aspire for those. They aspire to live on. They aspire to go to Vaikuntha. It's the same plant, Salokya. They aspire to have the same opulence as the Lord, Sarsti. They aspire to have the same bodily features as the Lord, Sarupya. You know, and they aspire to have the same, what's the word, samipya, to have a direct association then with the Lord, like that. But the Golokavasis, they don't even care about those so much. You know, they don't want those kinds of liberation because they're experiencing this intimate, intense, personal, you know, interaction with Krishna, which surpasses even those. But it's also a kind of liberation. You know, mother, the cowherd boys are much more liberated in their dealings with Krishna than his servants. And Mother Yashoda is even more liberated in her dealings with Krishna, you know, than the cowherd boy. She ties Krishna up, and Balaram comes and he sees this, and he wants to, you know, to kill whoever did this. And they say, "Oh, Mother Yashoda does it." And he says, "Oops, I can't untie him then, you know, because Mother Yashoda did it. Oops, you know. If I untie him, I'll be in trouble." So she's even in a more liberated position in dealing with Krishna than Balaram in that sense of Sakyaras.
So there is nothing wrong with the different kinds of liberation. It's just that there are different levels of liberation.
Exactly. Yeah, the liberated. I mean, the gopis, of course, are the most liberated in their dealings with Krishna. They can say things to Krishna and deal with him in a way that even Mother Yashoda wouldn't deal with him.
So if someone wants to merge into the Supreme, that's their business then. That's whatever they want to do, that's fine.
Compared to merging into the material nature, it's a step up. You know? That's what you do. You want to take drugs to make yourself stupid. You know, you're not satisfied. You're frustrated in your life. So, okay, my work's over. Oh my God! Now I can go in my club and I can start drinking and I can start merging into, like, you know, all this kind of nasty stuff, you know, and forget the other stuff. So it's better than to merge into the impersonal, You know, you can advance. You can go, when the Sankirtan parties go from Vaikuntha to the material world, they pass through the Brahma Jyoti, and sometimes people there emerge into that level. They hear the kirtan, and then they progress then, you know, from the impersonal Brahman to the higher level. So you can also do, you know, Sankirtan and the Brahma Jyoti. Mm-hmm. Which maybe you're experiencing.
I found your quote.
Yeah.
I found your quote. Yeah, it was from Bhagavad Gita, 12th chapter, text 13 and 14. The verse was, one who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor, who is free from false ego, and who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind intelligence fixed on me, such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. And it's the first paragraph of the purport. It says, coming again to the point of pure devotional service, the Lord is describing the transcendental qualifications of a pure devotee in these two verses. A pure devotee is never disturbed in any circumstances. He is not envious of anyone, nor does a devotee become his enemy's enemy. He thinks, this person is acting as my enemy due to my own past misdeeds. So better to suffer than to protest. Atenu kampam. I think that's the one you were referring to.
Yeah, it sounds right. About right. Although I have a suspicion, Prabhupada may also, you know, mention it a couple times, other times too. But that sounds the one I was, you know. Also, it's nice to hear the whole verse. Mm-hmm. That's one thing I've noticed now that, you know, sometimes my attitude was before, okay, someone's quoting a verse, yeah. But now it's like, even though it's like kind of like impersonal, I stop and I focus on it because I know, you know, accepting it into my intelligence and my memory will allow me to remember the whole thing later on, like that. You know, so I'm opening up, I'm surrendering more to hearing verses, you know, and trying to accept them even though I don't remember them perfectly. Yeah. You know. Shastra.
Maharaj, when I made my comment about something jumping at me, nothing had jumped at me in the class. I mean, it was a lovely class, but nothing really jumped. And then it happened. So I want to mention it when you were asking Mahesh's nice question about merging into the Brahman, and you mentioned something I've never heard before. I've never heard it stated that way. It really jumped at me, and I know you weren't really making a very big point about it, but it just jumped at me. And that was, you mentioned merging into material nature. I never heard that before. And then you very briefly touched on it, just becoming, you know, active within the material world and absorbing yourself in material life. That's kind of like merging into the material nature. And anyway, that kind of jumped at me. Really makes me think about how the materialist does. It just merges into this, in this quagmire of material existence, and almost like when you merge into the Brahman, one loses his identity. In a sense, by merging the material nature, even more we lose our identity, because we become so covered by the modes of nature and the false ego. That it really is a form of merging. I've never heard that, and that jumped at me, and that's definitely going to be sticking with me.
Do you know
Yoshitam Sangi Sangam, that, you know, by associating materialist, that opens the door to the hellish material existence, and we're just merging the material nature. I like that. So I just wanted to throw that in. That I know you weren't trying to make a big point of it. You were just passing, but it really jumped at me.
Do you know who is Spuds McKenzie?
No.
You don't know Spuds McKenzie? Half of your life is half of your life is wasted. Anybody know Spuds McKenzie?
I know who Beavis and Butthead are.
Okay. Spuds McKenzie was the dog, like in a black patch over his eye kind of thing, that a Budweiser was using for some time, you know, and they had him like at parties and stuff, you know, Spuds McKenzie, and Budweiser has the most like outrageous like statements, you know, of ignorance, you know. Like the, one of the recent ones was a guy holding a bottle of beer, Budweiser, and he says, "Why ask why? Why ask why? Just drink another beer and forget about it." So if you look on the internet or something, you'll see, you know, Spuds McKenzie, this dog, I forget what kind of dog he is, and it, one of the pictures shows him there seated at a party in a little elevated position, you know, with this big dog bowl of beer in front of him, and it says, the guru of good times. There it is. So even if you want to merge into the material existence, you still need a guru. And there you, there's your guru, yeah, the beer drinking dog.
Hi, Krishna. This is Bala Bhadra.
I recognize you from the land of trees.
Yes, sweet trees. So, Maharaj, you mentioned something, and I kind of got distracted when I heard it, so I'm not sure if I heard it right. Talking about doing Sankirtan and Brahma Jyoti, did I hear that right? And if I did, then, how do I understand that?
No, I can't remember where it's from. I think it's also mentioned in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. But also somewhere in Prabhupada's books or something that's... Like actually, it's in my notes someplace. I can dig it up. You know, if you want to pay me enough, I could dig it up. But Prabhupada says, you know, that people who are merged into the Brahman effulgence, you know, that level of consciousness, you know, and then that they achieve that level of consciousness of impersonal, you know, identification with Krishna's effulgence, the Brahman. He said, sometimes when the Sankirtan parties pass from Vaikuntha to the material world, you know, doing kirtan, chanting Hare Krishna, you know, then these yogis or these guys merge in the Brahman effulgence, they hear this, and then they make further progress to Vaikuntha. So you can go from the Brahman on up to Vaikuntha. And so, yeah, and we get this kind of thing, like someone like Mahesh or something, you know, maybe doing music programs with people who are peaceful, you know, free from material attachments. And they're in this position of actual nice people, calm, peaceful. And so you have to go there and you have to present things in such a way, you know, the kirtan in a very peaceful, non-material fashion. Whereas we may present the kirtan as like being a good source of adrenaline. Hari Bol Prabhu was a good kirtan. I was sweating. My adrenaline increased, you know. You see that sometimes. And that attracts certain people. Of these people, they'll be totally turned off, you know, because they want a kirtan which is free, you know, from all material gratification. So you get to present it that way very nicely. And then, if the real content is there, again, what's the word, like Makaranda Vayu, the four Kumaras, you know, they're an example of this, and Sukadeva Goswami was an example of this. They were in the Brahman level, but by hearing Bhagavatam and by smelling the aroma of Tulsi, at the lotus feet of Vishnu, they had a change in heart, and then they became devotees.
It just seems like such a rarity because, you know, generally we hear that when someone enters a Brahma Jyoti, he always falls down. So to hear something like, well, if by chance they should hear the holy name or the kirtan of the Lord, it just sounds like it's something that almost never really happens. When you hear it like that.
Yeah, but of course the example's there. That's where Sukadeva Goswami and the Kumaras are examples that are given. And then Tashyara Vinda, Nayanasya, Makanara Bandhu. That by hearing the, you know, the holy names like that, by hearing the Bhagavatam and stuff. So again, I also, generally speaking, people fall down. Ariya Krishna Paramparam. That's the way we hear it. Usually they fall down. Yeah. But, you know, I don't know what percentage, right? Like that. But definitely the possibility is there. And if you meet people like that, and maybe even ourselves, you know, by engaging in devotional service, Shrimbhatam Swakatakra and Krishna, Punya Shravana Kirtana, we become like that. And we may, you know, have some connection to Krishna as a person, and this and that. But really, we're into devotional service because it gives us a relief from anxiety, from all the problems we have and the worries we have. So then also, you know, we're looking for, you know, kirtan and, you know, and deity worship, in the mode of pure goodness at that point.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Probably the third canto. Is it the third canto? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe the third canto when the Kumaras they get rejected by Jaya. No, that's Jaya and Bijaya. It's the story of pregnancy of Ditti in the evening. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for giving class today.
Oh, thank you for listening, in spite of my disqualifications.
I'm giving a little bit of a choppy reception today, so I don't know how well you can hear me, but I was wondering if you could help me work through something. In today's translation, there's a small clause left out on the one that you read on the screen compared to the book that I have, which is an original, I guess, maybe. It says, actually, it's not an original. 11th English printing, 97, 50,000 copies. But anyway, the small clause that's left out isn't even that important, really. Just when Lord Brahma is speaking, he says, and although I am recognized as such by the great forefathers of the living entities, comma, who offer me respectful obeisances, comma, still I cannot understand him, the Lord, the very source of my birth. So the very small clause that was taken out, and it's not that big of a deal, I guess. But to me, it's huge. Like, if Srila Prabhupada put it there, why has it been taken out? So, I struggle with this every time there's a discrepancy. So I was wondering if you could just say something to me to help me get over it.
Yeah, I mean, exegesis or something like that, exegetical. It's a whole thing about how to interpret scriptures, how to add them in, how to take them out. And there's a very, very nice thing on the BBT, one guy, the BBC, one guy goes through like the gospels and which gospels were permitted and which gospels weren't permitted. And basically, you know, nobody really knows what Jesus said to a large degree. It's the same with Buddha. Lord Chaitanya, we have a lot more information. You know, people with writings and stuff. But after Jesus disappeared or something, you know, people are running here and there. They have notebooks. He's coming back any day. And so then different gospels, evangelicals, were developed. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But there's also one by Thomas. There's also one by Mary. And maybe another one like that. And they have different perspectives, different information, you know. And they were all circulating. Then at some point they started like to formalize things and decide what should be included, what should not be included. And definitely seems to be very, you know, strong political perspectives on it. And things were even banned, you know. And so finally, some of the ones were the apocryphal gospels were just lost. Then maybe about, I don't know, 60 years ago or something, some guys were digging for a well, and they found bones of an old corpse. They found a jar, and they found the three apocryphal gospels there. Okay, yeah, you know, so on. And so then, you know, more information, more cross studies. So it's a big area, not just in us. It's nothing new, and so it's not surprising that it's going to be there. You know, and so it's a big point. I mean, I've done my investigation. And some people will, on one side will say, oh, you know, now Prabhupada's books are simply poison. His new books are milk touched by the lips of a serpent, you know, on that extreme, you know. Other side will say that you know, the corrections that have been made have eliminated big mistakes and that kind of confusion, you know. And so actually I was talking to, Davida yesterday. And it seems like basically he and Jayavaita Maharaj at this point make most of the decisions about changes, but they publish them. Now, as far as I know, they're all published on a source site there. And myself investigating them, there are maybe some changes which I don't agree with, but nothing seems to be so major, because Prabhupada repeats the basic points over and over again. And so, like, the basic points are clear, the process is clear, and if you follow it, then you'll have sufficient insight and intelligence to be able to distinguish things which aren't true. Because the Bhagavatam only talks about reality. You know? And so because of that, as you begin to know reality, you know, by purification, then you'll be able to see this is not quite right. You know? And other than that, some of the other changes, yeah, they're just definitely mistakes. And some of them have caused problems in people understanding our philosophy. And other than that, other ones, you know, probably, as the Prabhupada said, they make Prabhupada not look proper, and so on. So that's my perspective on it. And the specific change like that, I don't know what was added or what was taken out. You know?
Don't we as disciples respect what Srila Prabhupada said on the tapes and just want to present what he actually translated and said?
Okay, this is very interesting, because what I did, going ahead with that, so Prabhupada, I think he dictated the Krishna book on tapes, okay? Then my investigation, asking Nitya Gaurasundar, my close friend who I know, and he talked to Sashrut Maharaj, who's like a very close disciple of him, and I'm Kachin Maharaj. Then what happened was that Sashrut Maharaj then transcribed the tapes. Okay. So if we get something like Pitri, with Pitri, and the devotees don't know what Pitri means, so they may transcribe it as Planet of the Trees. That, of course, is a very famous one from the Bhagavad Gita. And so if we go back, if we got the original dictation tapes, we can hear, oh, it's not Planet of the Trees, it's Pitri. So then we go ahead and change the that in the Bhagavad Gita, because there is no Planet of the Trees as far as we know, like that, and so on. The original tape is like that. Okay, that's one thing. The next thing is that with the Krishna book, then after Sashrut Maharaj transcribed them, and we got to watch for that, like you're saying, he gave it back to Prabhupada. Then Prabhupada read those transcriptions and then manually then changed things. For example, on the original tapes, Prabhupada mentions Mirabai in the Krishna book. Now, as far as I know, the devotees didn't know almost anything about Mirabai. There was no reason for them to exclude her. But at that point, when it came back, I have a suspicion at that point Prabhupada himself, you know, eliminated Mirabai because, you know, she's a little bit controversial to understand and stuff like that. You know? So there's the tapes themselves start to be a little bit tricky, because sometimes then Prabhupada himself edited the transcriptions like that.
Thank you. I know about those examples, but in this case, this book was already published, and then on the screen it comes up differently, so it's being edited. And like I said, it's a small clause, nothing for me to really choke over. It's just I'm just disappointed that they're, you know, not the same on the screen.
Yeah, this is a very important point. It's an important point. It's an important point. Then Virjendra Nandana, who you may know, right, and his wife, he told me, and again, I know him, I can judge him. That's the point with letters. You don't know who wrote this kind of stuff, you know. But Virjendra Nandana, his wife, Datura, he told me he was in San Diego when a new volume of the Bhagavatam came out, you know, published. Prabhupada looked at it, and he said Prabhupada was reading it. And he said, Prabhupada said. He said, why are they saying this? I never said that. So even the books that were published, it's not that Prabhupada approved all of them as being, you know, perfect, you know, like word for word, phrase for phrase. You know? There may have been even things that Prabhupada himself wanted to be changed in the books that were published when he was here, but, you know, he couldn't do it. But the thing, the main thing is redundancy, is that the basic points are repeated so often in so many perspectives that, and if we apply them, you know, then we'll become self-realized. And we'll be able to recognize this is an important point. You know, this, I should take some effort to contact the editors and this and fight for this. You know? I guess I should go here. I'm actually burning up my data for the month. So thank you all very, very much for your association. These classes are so much help for myself. Hare Krishna.
Haribol.
Marvelous class, Maharaj. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much.
Haribol.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Haribol.
Haribol.